This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Appreciate you chiming in and tuning in throughout the course of the show. This is Old School, brought to the people by who, Jay Foreman?
The Mercado, certified Piedmontese, special ingredients of Butcher Shop, 84th and Havelock, 30th and Yankee Hill, 85th Andromat / Old Cheney, and 168th and Maple up there in the O. Or the Metro, or whatever you want to call it. O-Town.
Up in Seattle. Big one last night, Jay. Big one. Really modified the NFC playoff picture. Let's talk about it. A 38-37 overtime win, a walk-off for the Seahawks at home. Teams entered with the same record. Seattle now moves to 12-3. The Rams drop to 11-4 with 2 weeks remaining. I turned this game on at 30-14 early in the fourth quarter, Jay. Obviously, two scores in the NFL. If you win by two scores, feels like a lot. Sometimes in this modern day and age of the NFL, though, two scores can get erased in a hurry. Seattle had timely plays, a punt return touchdown helped swing things. The Rams kind of sputtered there in the fourth quarter. But man, that was an incredible, incredible Thursday night football game where honestly, I didn't hate the Seahawks uniforms either. Thought I wasn't going to like them going in, but certainly a heck of a performance and a deserved win for the Seahawks, especially with the way they played for really the last, 25 minutes of that one.
Yeah, they really turned it on here. Obviously, the third quarter you go into halftime down, obviously 13-7, and then you're in a good old fashioned shootout, and obviously being able to, get a little bit of. I say they created their own luck, chasing the ball and obviously getting it overturned in the end zone. It's the right calls by the letter of the law. I've never seen anything like that before. Probably won't ever see it again. And they withstood a phenomenal performance by Stafford in Nacua.
Yeah,
I mean. Very rarely do you lose a game with no turnovers, no sacks given up, 400 yards passing. I don't think ever. Well,
the Seahawks are the first team in NFL history to allow a 450-yard passer, a 200-yard receiver, no takeaways, no sacks, all in the same game and still win.
Still win, And you got to have the will to win, and obviously they did enough offensively to, get the job done. So they had to defend home field. Now you got to look at and hope for some help. And, for the Rams, going into the game, you always kind of felt like, look, they were the odds on favorite. They've been playing the best. You're up there in Seattle. Seattle was able to work through, Sam Darnold struggling a little bit. And then he was able to kind of get it together. Now you got to look at who the Rams play and who Seattle plays and hope for, the Rams want to get it to where Seattle and them are playing for it. In 2 weeks, because I think they play at the Rams, right?
No. Two teams are done.
Oh, they're done.
Okay. So on that, let me see if I can find it. I saved it here. Yeah. So this is from Kyle Soppy, who ends up working with Pro Football and Sports Network. The Rams and the Seahawks have played twice this year. The Rams have scored 58 points and gained 830 total yards. The Seahawks in the two matchups scored 57 points and had 829 total yards. About as even as you can get.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. That was for the – it looks like the Rams, they play the Falcons in the another layup game, I think, to end the season. So
at the Falcons and host the Cardinals.
And that's two layups.
On the flip side for Seattle.
They play at the Panthers.
A lot to play for,
and they're tough at Carolina.
At the crib.
And then they play at 49ers. So it was – in the NFL, when teams are desperate. Mm-hmm. And they need, it's like a must have. Yep. They're going to empty the tank. They need this to kind of keep themselves alive. Very, very easily, they could go 0-2 and the Rams go 2-0 They're in there.
Yeah, Seattle's in the driver's seat now.
Yeah.
But they haven't clinched anything.
Yeah, they're in the driver's seat, but they shouldn't feel comfortable.
No.
And I think they're, I mean, look, they got a lot to clean up defensively. Puka Nacua was off the charts. Still very immature, but he was able to step up, as you know, big time as far as when Devontae Adams is out. But, you know, Seattle was able to pull out that victory. I think it was a classic game. I mean, that was it wasn't as bad defensively as it was when the Rams played the Chiefs a few years ago, and it was like
54-51. Yeah.
This was actually, you know, I think this Puka Nacua was just, I mean, that catch he made on the banana route, it's kind of lazy seven cut, and he caught it and kind of twisted his body back and hit the ground and hit his head, and then he didn't even go out of the game, came back and made another 50-50 catch.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up scoring. Then he had a big like deep over route, and they missed. And
well, the breakdown of that play, well, yeah, was Stafford a little bit of a no look. No, Ernest look. Jones is right in position there.
And that's what
until he's not.
Yeah, well, what he did, he's looking over there, and Ernest Jones just floated one step to the left too much.
Well, and the other safety had to follow the tight end. Right. You had cleared him. Like, that's,
and he threw it right where you were. Yeah, and there was another big play that Stafford was kind of getting chased out of the pocket. Somebody was around his feet, and Nacua was open again. He overthrew him.
Yeah.
I mean, they were on that. They were on, man, and that's hard to withstand. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, very rarely do you, you know, be able to get on the plane or not on the plane, or at least go home with a victory. I mean, I've seen it up close and personal with Dan Marino.
Hmm.
We were able to win.
Yeah.
But there was nothing you could do. And, you know, it's just like in baseball. Good pitching beats what? Good hitting.
Good great. Hitting. Right. Every time.
Every single time.
Mm-hmm. Next Gen Stats says the Seahawks win probability was as low as 2.7% with about 9 minutes left, trailing 30-14 in their comeback win. Seattle's chances of earning the one seed in the NFC are now 52%. Los Angeles' chances dropped to 21%. So Seattle's chances at 52%, they were 4% of earning the one seed when they were down by 16 points. Yeah. They pull it off thanks to more NFL history, Jay, right? The 450 passing yards, 200 yards, no sacks, no takeaways. First team like that to win in NFL history. How about this? The Seahawks became the first NFL team ever to win an overtime game on a two-point conversion. And they're, I believe, the first team in NFL history with three successful two-point conversions in the fourth quarter or overtime in a victory. Talk about desperation. Had to have it, needed to have it. On the one hand, wouldn't have necessarily been in that position if Sam Darnold started off better.
Yeah.
But he came back. He played well. Did this answer any questions? Is Sam Darnold done seeing ghosts now, or is that just desperation mode? Hey, they got this one, but questions are still there.
There's still questions. And I don't know if he's – I think that game against New England, he was seeing ghosts. I think he was just stage fright right now. You know, I think I think that's where he's at. I mean, it's a big game. You got to play well. Sometimes maybe he gets too hyped up. And I mean, cause he's got all the skills. I mean, let's not, you know, overlook some, you know, he's a good football player.
Oh yeah.
He got a good arm and he's played well and thrown for it. But I think sometimes the pressure can get to guys. And he started out slow. And I think he's also very young in this type of pressure. You got to think when you're at the Jets when he was, then you're, what did he go to, Panthers? You're not in the mix all the time. So you
backed up to the 49ers, right, way down the depth chart. So Minnesota last year.
Yeah. But then that was his first taste of being in the big time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think the criticism that he got, I criticized him. I mean, I think some of the passes he was throwing were bad, but that offensive line with Minnesota at that point in time in the year was porous at best, and that's why they addressed it this offseason. We'll see, and it's a little bit better than he was a couple weeks ago when he played really, really bad, because he was able to kind of get out his own way. So you got to give him credit there, that where he was able to, you know, get that get right back and obviously, you know, lead the team to victory.
Flip side of that, for the Rams, Jay, how many opportunities did they have to close that one out and couldn't do it? There were 11 possessions in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
11. The average number of possessions in an NFL game is 24. You had half of that in the fourth quarter. Yeah. Rams get one more first down. Maybe things are different. Certainly string together one or two more drives. And of course you have the missed field goal by Harrison Mevis that ends up looming incredibly large, but both teams get a stop. Rams march down the field and score with that Stafford to Nacua pass. Rams had every chance to close this one out. They didn't do it. Does that raise any questions about the Rams and what they could hope to accomplish in the postseason?
A little bit, because you would think with the way that they're playing, they would be able to put the dagger in our, I mean, I remember it was about 3 minutes and Seattle messed up and it was like Stafford got his helmet. He looked at McVay. I'm like, oh yeah, this game, this is over. And next thing you know, Seattle had the ball back with like a minute and 30 left.
Yeah.
Tricked it off.
Yeah.
Then you got the ball back again.
Really smart timeout usage by McDonald.
Yes.
Used them all, got the 2 minute timeout in there as well. Right. Took your chance, failed it. And then the Rams have the ball back with a chance.
Right. With a chance. And so I think that's where they're really kicking themselves.
Yeah.
Sure. In the moment, you could be mad or not be familiar with the 2-point overturn or 2-point play overturn. Mm-hmm. You really need to be mad. It's like they just handed it to us, like at least a true opportunity.
Yeah.
Two times with 3 minutes left, three and some change. Mm-hmm. That hardly ever happens that you get two possessions in like 2 minutes.
Right. And your defense that had been shredded for the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Came up with a huge stop.
Yeah. Huge stop. So you keep letting that team hang around like that, you know, you'll get, you know, a little bit of surprise and obviously, you know, go home with a little bit of disappointment.
2366 on our starter Heyman Jewelers text lines points out to the Rams blew a big lead against the Eagles early in the season too.
That is true. So now you got to really look at how you're finishing games, situational football, clock management, 4 to 6 minute drill, 6 to 4 minute drill.
Yeah.
And you got to really start honing that in because start to the middle of the fourth quarter, you know, you got that cornered.
Yeah.
Now you got to learn how to close out games. And it is hard when you're playing against the Eagles. It is hard when you're playing on the road at Seattle. But man, especially this last night.
For a head coach and a quarterback who have been there, done that before. Mm-hmm. It shows one of two things. Number one, they still have room to grow. Number two, it can happen to anybody. But you still kind of expect a little bit more from that head coach and that quarterback who's been playing really well, Jay. I mean, Robert Mays with The Athletic points this out, or maybe with The Athletic. Matthew Stafford's averaging 278 passing yards per game, over 8 yards per attempt, and is on pace to throw 45 or more touchdowns. One of potentially eight of those seasons in NFL history. Stafford's playing so well.
At 37
he played well, put up the numbers last night, has been known for those clutch moments coming through, even his time in Detroit when they were so bad. It was often the defense. You know, Stafford would score, give him the lead late, defense would end up coughing it up. Stafford's been clutch, which is why I'm willing to give him a little bit of a pass. But you add the Eagles game on top of this one. I think it just goes to show there really is no true favorite in the NFL this year in either conference.
It's game by game. He's been clutch. And when you're known as being clutch, that means you've actually failed some too.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's such a topic, you know, because he had 3 or 4 opportunities to, you know, be clutch. You know what's funny? You know, he went to high school with Clayton Kershaw. Mm-hmm. And remember when Clayton Kershaw in the playoffs never could, you know, pitch well or get over the hump. And they were asking, like, Matthew Stafford about Clayton Kershaw, why he's not clutch, because he's been so clutch. Mm-hmm. And so that's just an interesting, you know, tidbit. But I think he'll look the season he's having, 37 years old, an offseason where it seemed like the Rams didn't even want him.
Right.
They were trying to trade him.
Yeah.
And then remember, he had a mini holdout because of his back. And then, you know, he didn't really rehab his back because he didn't know whether he was going to be at the Rams or not. And they were kind of like, yeah, we're trying to get rid of you. We don't want you to know we're trying to trade you. All right, what kind of contract can we get since nobody wants you? And everybody knows you want to stay here. Mm-hmm. All right, let's figure something out. And then he didn't practice all training camp.
Yeah.
Here he is. He's probably on the pace for 4,600 yards.
Something like that. Yeah.
At 37.
Many yards.
Yeah. All while breaking in Devontae Adams and obviously Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp is actually in Seattle.
Yeah. Kupsker does point out, though, the Puka Nacua angle, 12 for 225 and 2 touchdowns, including the 58-yarder. Kupsker does point out Jackson Smith and Jigba, 8 for 96 and a touchdown, long of 27 on 13 targets for him. Jay, that's a pretty pedestrian normal day for Jackson Smith and Jigba at this point. Do you think Seattle maybe took too long to try to get him involved in the game?
Yeah.
And if so, why would they wait? Just game flow? What do you think?
Well, I think you know, when you're a true number one receiver and you're not schematically, you know, getting schemed open, the defense is rolling to you. But I think in Jigba, you know, Smith, he can do different things, so you can move him around.
Yeah.
So that's where you need to evolve, and that will help Sam Darnold out starting faster too.
Yeah.
Move him around, get him going, get the confidence going. Obviously, he has run after the catch ability, and plus he's a problem, period. So
yeah,
I think that's also what, you know, both teams are going to go back. Obviously, one's going to celebrate the victory, one's going to be a little bit upset, but you're going to have to look at the nuances of it because, look, it was a one-point game last night. It was a two-point game earlier in the year. You might see each other in the playoffs. You got to find some way to get over the hump. You're not going to blow. It's not going to be a blowout.
No.
It's going to come right down to the last couple of possessions. It's going to come right down to the last, you know, couple, like, minutes in execution. And you got to be able to lean on your fundamentals in order to get over the hump.
38-37 is Seattle taking down Los Angeles. Jay, D-Man does want to know about that two-point conversion. Says, I don't know if that was a backward pass last night. Looked pretty close to me. I thought it was pretty clearly backward. But then you hear the whistle before Charbonnet may or may not have possession. Some former NFL refs on Twitter were saying, yeah, no, it's the right call. You know, he did clearly establish possession. What a funky play.
Yeah, that was... Yeah, I mean, because he just went over there and kind of like, all right, I'll just pick it up.
Yeah.
The rule is in defense, no matter what, you'll go pick the ball up. But I think the whistle made everybody stop.
Yeah. Except for Charbonnet, who just kind of picked it up on a hum.
Humbug. Yeah, he just went. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like he was chasing the ball and he knew it was live.
Right.
He was just going through it, and then, you know, he got a free 2 points out of it.
Congratulations. Ends up tying the game.
Yeah.
Giving Seattle one last chance. Elsewhere in the NFL, Jay, I do think this is interesting as well. So Adam Schefter. Actually, before we get to that, sorry. With the Rams going to the 5 seed, imagine being in the 1 seed as long as they've been, talented as they are, you have to go play on the road in the first round.
It's almost not fair because remember a few years ago, Seattle was 7-9, and New Orleans the same thing had to go on the road up there, and that's where the, you know, Marshawn Lynch, the beast mode,
Beastquake,
started.
Okay, now to the AFC. If Broncos Jags on Sunday. If the Broncos win, Sean Payton will join Bill Belichick as the only head coaches in NFL history with at least 5 13-win seasons.
Wow.
Is that, I mean, we knew Sean Payton was a good coach, but...
This is quiet.
But quiet is kept. Yeah. Even in the era where we've moved to 17-game schedules, winning 13 games with this Broncos team in that division, that's a tip of the cap.
Yeah. I mean, he's a heck of a coach, and, you know, I mean, I think he's probably... You lose track of him because once he gets on TV, which he was good at TV, you know, now he's head coach of the Broncos. And, you know, they're a really good team. They're not a really ultra talented team. They're talented, but they're not like the best roster in the NFL. Now, see, he's done a really good job. So, look, when you win a Super Bowl and you're as consistent as he's been, you know, that's how you have, you know, get in there with the likes of Bill Belichick. I mean, I would have never thought it. As good as New Orleans was year in and year out down there. In a mediocre division. But, you know, you get, you know, remember.
I'm saying that's how you stack wins and get to 13.
It was always, they would always kind of be either the division champ or, you know, like when they had to go on the road, you know, it would kind of be like, okay, Tampa would be good for a year, then Atlanta, you know, and all that. But consistently how they were, you never thought, okay, New Orleans won 13 games.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, because it's hard to win 13.
Right.
I mean, you go 11-5, that's a good year.
Well, you got to think, remember they had a controversial call down there when they lost to the Rams.
That's right.
And the referee, I don't know where he's at. They said he had, you know, money on the game and stuff like that. So he's battled through some trials and tribulations. It's paying off right now for the Denver Broncos. Right on time, because Mahomes is going to be at home.
Right. When you look at the years that Sean Payton won 13 down in New Orleans. So the first time that he would have won the 13 games would have been in 2009, year that they win the Super Bowl. They go 13-3, obviously win the division, 510 points scored. Did it again in 2011 when they lose in the divisional round of the playoffs. Then did it back-to-back years, actually, 2018 and 2019. That was the Drew Brees, Alvin Kamara, and Michael Thomas years, lost in the conference championship game in 2018 and then 2019 in the wild card round. Do you trust Sean Payton the most of any coach in the AFC playoffs, given that Denver's, you know, in the pole position? Do you trust him as much as you would, say, a John Harbaugh if the Ravens make it? Do you trust him more than a Mike Tomlin with Pittsburgh? Vrabel's have plenty of playoff experience. How much do you trust him in a young New England
team? What you mean, what is your definition of trust? That, like, call a good game.
Call a good game, manage the moment, put his players in position to succeed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's going to call a good game. I mean, he going to be out there in his Jordans. He's going to do his thing. I trust him there. I think he's got a good thing going. I think one of the best moves he did was not put the panic button and not fire Vance Joseph. And that Vance Joseph ever since then has got put that defense out there. They led the league in sacks last year, and they're probably going to do it again this year. And they are a problem.
We've come a long way from Vance Joseph, Nebraska defensive coordinator rumors.
When was that?
Well, it's after Scott got fired. And there's, keep Mickey Joseph the head coach. You can bring Vance Joseph back with him.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Because
it was never going to happen.
Because he had just left Denver, right? Yeah. Or, yeah. It would have worked out here. You've been blitzing.
None other.
Yeah, them dudes, they causing some problems, man.
Pecan Pie, Denver's schedule was crap the last 4 or 5 years. Easy to get W's. Well, Denver, let me look this up just to make sure, but I think Denver would have been playing primarily third place schedule, second and third, but it's still the NFL.
Here's the reality. Winning a game in the NFL is hard to do. Winning 13 or potentially or 12 at this point is an extremely big deal. Winning a game in the NFL is hard to do. Yes, there's some schedules that are more favorable and all that, but man, there's so much parity that there is no week off. There is no, you know, back like, I don't know, I guess even like when I was with the Texans, I mean, the Colts probably knew that they were going to beat us. You know what I'm saying? The NFL wanted them to win. They were going to beat us. There's a talent everywhere.
Yeah.
And there's no dominant team out there. I mean, the closest one we had was the Chiefs, and they at the crib.
Straight kicking it.
And they had, you know, a great run where they got 3 Super Bowls out of it, but it wasn't like the Patriots.
The list of guys that the Chiefs are sitting this week, now that they're eliminated from playoff contention, and yes, some of these guys have been
banged up
already, but ruled out for Sunday against the Titans. They will be without Jay. Rashee Rice, Trent McDuffie, Leo Chenal, Jalen Moore, Juwan Taylor, Tyquan Thornton, Nazi Johnson, Derek Nnadi, and a couple others.
But one name that's playing.
Chris Jones.
And Travis Kelce. Yeah, they're depleted.
Your expectations for Gardner Minshew against the Titans?
Oh, he's going to have a good game because they ain't seen him before.
He's been in the division.
Not with the Chiefs.
Fair.
So, but next week, he's going to play like garbage. He's going to play like garbage. So, it's tough for the Chiefs. I'm pretty sure I'll tell you, like, from experience, going from Buffalo to Houston, you know what I mean? Making the playoffs, being in the hunt, you know what I mean? Knowing that we're going to play at least an extra week or whatever. Sometimes they had a week off, so we got 2 weeks, and you're in the tournament. And once you get in there, you think, oh, anything can happen, right? Mm-hmm. And then to go down to Houston.
Whew.
It's 5 weeks left. You got your U-Haul ready? You staying here this offseason? Where are you going? Are you going fishing? Yeah, I'm going fishing. Hey, I mean, literally, that's the way it is. And so for the Chiefs, they worked extremely hard, really good, obviously really, really talented, well-coached. Well, when they're in training camp, they knew, all right, we're playing well into the playoffs.
Yeah.
This year, they, even though they got officially eliminated, they were eliminated probably 4 weeks prior.
Yeah.
They knew it then.
Yeah.
They were hanging on by a string, mm-hmm. and they knew it then.
Kept getting a couple breaks with other teams losing.
Yeah.
And
but they weren't winning. Yeah, and they weren't.
They have one win in like the last 7 weeks.
Right. So they knew it was over. O-V-E-R.
Done. I wouldn't read this except that Eric and I are fans of the same NFL franchise.
Yeah.
I got to read it. Just so you know, it's nothing personal. I bet Jay lost to the Colts a lot.
What's wrong with him, man? It's Friday. You know, so there's some people in this world wake up with venom in their veins. And you know what I'm saying?
It's like, not even like Trey Palmer wake up pissed off.
No, it's just like you just, what happened? What happened in your REM sleep? Did you have a bad dream? It's 7 a.m. You're giving business. It's Friday, Eric. You need to chill and stop bringing up memories of Dallas Clark. I saw a thing where they were talking about the best tight ends of all time. And it was like, you know, the Ozzie Newsomes and you know, Gronkowski and Kelsey and Gonzalez and all them.
Gates and Sharp
and all them. And Mackey and stuff like that. That number 10, you know who they had. I don't know. It had to be Iowa.
DC 44?
Yeah. He ain't wasn't that good now. I mean, dang.
Let's pull the numbers here.
Pull his numbers against Steve Jordan. Cam Jordan's dad.
Yeah. Dallas Clark, 143 games, 505 catches, 5,600 yards, and 53 touchdowns. One-time Pro Bowler, one-time All-Pro.
He ain't top 10 of all time. He ain't even better than like Mark Bavaro.
Dallas Clark played for two teams after the Colts. I did not remember this. Do you remember who Dallas Clark played for?
Was one of them Denver?
It was not Denver. One in the NFC and then one in the AFC to close things out.
Really?
Yes.
He ain't played then.
So he left the Colts in 2011. Mm-hmm. He went to Tampa Bay in 2012 and went to Baltimore in 2013.
Mm. Not bad.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Anyways, he's Jay Foreman. I'm Austin Norman. We'll talk more on Kyle Whittingham's future. Go check out the early break interview with Kyle Whittingham from earlier today after you're done with Old School. But Kyle Whittingham made some interesting comments. He's open to work. He's looking for it. Where could Kyle Whittingham end up? We'll discuss that next on the show.
Watch Old School live on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. Old School with Foreman.
Family owned with their own team of installers. Give Heartland of Nebraska Windows a call today for more info. You can do that at 402-430-3852 or by visiting them online at heartlandofnebraskawindows.com. Jay, before we get to Kyle Whittingham and his comments, we'll get to this on our starter Heyman Jewelers text line from Ben. He says, forgive me if you've already mentioned this, but if the Bears knock off the Packers this week, will Jay Foreman finally give the Bears the respect they're due?
I sure will. The Bears have been impressive. Ben Johnson has been excellent. I've been impressed with him for quite some time. He stands on business. He stood on business, even when he went out there and jumped on the plane right back, him and Aaron Glenn, to the Commanders. He has brought a standard of excellence in how they go about doing things. He has a vision. And yeah, I'm impressed by him. I'm impressed actually how they drafted and how they free agents. Now they got my man Gardner Johnson, mm-hmm. who is a problem. I like him. He'd be a great teammate to have. Yeah, they beat the Packers. Actually, I'm hoping that they beat the Packers. I'd be happy for the Bears. It's been miserable probably for my man Greg Smith is a diehard Bears fan. Shout out, Greg. The Bears are going to Bears. And so, mm-hmm. you know, look, they got it. They get it right, you know. And they get over to beat the Packers. I don't think it would even be a big task to beat the Packers.
Not in their current state.
Yeah, for them.
The issue for Chicago will be whatever else happens the rest of the year, they've accomplished everything they've wanted to pretty much and more. What does next year look like? Think about how we were talking about the Commanders last year. I know, Caleb and Jaden Daniels aren't the same, but to be able to validate, let's say the Bears end up winning the North, that's from a fourth place schedule to a first place schedule. Yeah. On top of, I'm sure there'll still be some questions about Caleb, you know, can they validate anyways? So good on them. They've had a good year this year, but I'm more worried about next year for them. Now.
Yeah, you got, I mean, how you deal with success, and that's why you have to match in the league when you have a chance to exceed expectations, yours and other people's, and get on a magical run. That's why you gotta cash in on it.
Yeah.
Because next year gets extremely harder just based on the schedule change. You're probably going to lose some guys in free agency. You're going to have to cut some guys you don't want to. Mm-hmm. And the offseason is extremely different. You're treated a lot different in Chicago. You're thought of nationally a lot different.
And that's a tough division. I mean, Minnesota will bounce back. Detroit will have more continuity. Green Bay will get guys back from injury.
Then you're right back at square one. Now you're going to get everybody's best shot. Mm-hmm. Everybody's still with, you know, when you went on a pretty good run of playing consistent football, everybody's like, oh, let's see next week. Okay, let's see the next week. Well, they kept playing well, and then obviously they're in a position to win it. And with Minnesota being out of it and Detroit kind of still feeling it, you know, figuring it out, Chicago's in a great position.
Speaking of magical runs, semi-magical for Utah, if not more, under Kyle Whittingham. He had this to say today, Jay. I'm a free agent. I'm in the transfer portal. Like I said, I'm at peace, and I did not want to be that guy that overstayed his welcome with people just saying, hey, when's this guy going to leave? That was not my intention ever. I hope I didn't do that. I'm sure with some people I did do that, but the timing is Right. But again, the first two sentences, I'm a free agent. I'm in the transfer portal. Kyle Whittingham wants a job.
What jobs are open?
There's a big one up north, if.
He fits it. He's tough.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't bat an eye if Michigan hired him. I mean, actually, it would bring him some credibility.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it actually would probably clean up a lot of stuff. And I don't know if he wants to go into that type of environment with the athletic department. You don't even know if the AD that's going to, I guess, would hire you is going to be there. You don't even know when they would be. I mean, you got to put together a staff, which I'm sure he would be able to do so. But I think it's the bigger thing is that he's saying without saying he felt like he got pushed out the door.
Yeah.
And it kind of coincides with that new private equity. They want a new face.
Mm-hmm.
At least he got it to his buddy Scully.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been together for a while.
Oh, a long time.
Mm-hmm. But still, this dude brought you from the depths of hell. I mean, obviously, Urban did his thing, but, I mean, nobody really respected you. I mean, when Urban left, it was like, oh, that's great. You were there for 2 years. You're still on your first year's rent.
Oh, yeah.
In your place up there, Urban. Then he took it over, and he's been very, very consistent. Made them competitive when they didn't have any of the resources or even the aura to go up to Utah. Took a, mm-hmm. And he's put a lot of players at the next level, some really, really good players, and he has an eye for talent. He's been around the block. I was listening to a little bit. With Dick Tomey and all those guys, and obviously Urban, and obviously he's pretty close to Bill Bush. I mean, if he goes to Michigan, I mean, and you can't tell me that he doesn't have the energy. I mean, you see the dude; he's still in great shape, and I'm sure it's hard for him to walk out of there and not be. I know he's got one more game, but not to be the head coach at Utah anymore. Because I remember a couple years ago when he was really up for some jobs, he chose to stay there. And that's why you also have to be wary of, like, when you're a coach and you do what everybody wants you to do and what you really think you should do. Well, a couple of years after that, now they're pushing you out the door. Now, was it worth it? How many opportunities has he had to move on? And he might be still coaching somewhere.
Right.
Because I remember they had a game, I think maybe it was against BYU, where he was riding his Harley into the stadium and all that. And so I'm sure Utah is always going to be his home. He's been there. He played up at BYU. I mean, so that's just who he is and where he's from. But, it'd be interesting to see what his next move is.
I think a few schools that I would have my eye on, I think if it's Kenny Dillingham to Michigan, Arizona State would make a call. If I'm Colorado, new AD, say Dion, you have some health troubles, right?
Yeah,
you know,
I got you, play. This is prime, but I'm still prime, baby.
I'm just saying, do you at least kick the tires on something like that? Had Stanford not hired Tavita Pritchard, maybe. That's down the list, but it's a reputable school. I don't know, but if you got pushed out, you've at least been around the Pac-12 footprint. For a while.
Probably he's definitely recruited in those areas.
I'm saying. So I think Oregon State, I know they have a coach, would have been too far a step down.
Yeah.
Washington State, obviously, as well. So I think that Colorado would be one that I would monitor if they're willing to do that.
Just sit out a year.
Take a year off. You're still 67.
Take a year off. Do some TV. Sure. Travel around. He'll get to see the inside ins and outs of the program. He'll have a good feel. A lot of those media guys know the guys are going to get fired because they talk to the ADs off the record.
Right.
They know the guys are going to be out. Then you can kind of position yourself. Why would you want to jump right back in? If Michigan calls, he's probably got to take it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get much bigger than that. But
would he take Iowa?
That never even crossed my mind.
I hate to even say it.
I think he would, but I think if you fire Kurt Ferentz,
you get Kirk to step down after age 70.
Okay. Then you get younger.
Slightly younger.
But you go younger.
Yeah.
And Curtis,
I agree. I'm just saying, yeah. If he's out there, Iowa's not forcing
Iowa.
Him out.
He fits Iowa. But you know what could happen? I doubt he'll ever go to Iowa. Well, you know what could happen? And you know everybody's a copycat league. Well, they did it down in Utah. We got him to leave. Kirk, it's time for you to go, brother. We got you a nice lake house up there in Lake Minnetonka. You know what I'm saying? You got you a nice big old mansion. We got you set up. Got you a nice boat. You can have an office here. Just not the head coaches, though. That's it. I think they'll go younger.
I agree.
But he would fit there.
That's why I threw it out there, because I know it's not going to happen.
But he would fit there, though. Yeah.
He would.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's a good enough coach that there might be a surprise team that says, well, we weren't really happy with you. We didn't know this guy was available. We reached out, gauged interest. He's willing enough to come here. So, see him. I don't know who that school is, yeah. But there's got to be a school or two out there that's kicking the tires on it right now.
I think it's so late.
A portal hasn't even opened yet. It's early enough.
No, for him to get it. There's no other jobs besides Michigan.
Well, what I'm saying is I think he's a good enough coach.
Oh, to boot your present day coach.
If you weren't satisfied, you're going to bring him back because you didn't have any better options. You don't do this until you've talked to his people and know for sure that you have him, because the portal hasn't opened yet. If you make the move over the weekend and Whittingham's in place by Monday, it's a rush. But, I mean, you still have 10-ish days till the portal opens.
Yeah, I don't know if that'd be hard for – them coaches are loyal to each other. It'd be hard for – they're like a band of brothers. They ain't going to do that. But he's a good enough coach to do so. But I think he's going to take a year off if Michigan doesn't come calling or – Arizona State. Man, I'm shocked that he was like, pretty much I got pushed out, man. I'm still ready to coach.
You think it's the private equity thing?
Well,
is that?
That's usually what happens.
Your number one theory?
Not the number one is number two. I think number one is Scully got impatient and wanted a shot right now.
Yeah, that's where I would lean to. And I'm sure if the private equity people would be like, come on, man, chill. Yeah. You're not pushing out a legend. But if they're just in, they don't know the fabric, like you would say, the culture, like, okay, sure, whatever. You're head coach and waiting. Why not?
Yeah, we want a new face of the program because we're giving you some new money. So I don't know, man. I just can't. I'm still shocked that he's like, all right, I still want to coach. I thought it was going to be like, nah, man, you know what? I'm ready to chill. I'm ready to maybe do some other things. I might consult a little bit. He's like, oh, nah. He's like, I don't ever want to overstay my welcome. So I hope I know there's some, because then the other big thing he said was, I know there's some that thought I'd overstay my welcome. I hope there's some that didn't think I overstayed my welcome.
Yeah.
He's like, but I'm out. So there was a lot of people probably telling him, like, you need to go, which is crazy. They're ranked number 15.
Yeah. We did get some news. This is from the Salt Lake Tribune. So Devin Dampier will indeed be playing in the game, starting quarterback for Utah. The two standout tackles, Spencer Fano and Caleb Lomu, both opt out. Yep. So Nebraska will not have to worry about that. And then on defense, Logan Fano has also opted out. So three pretty key pieces to what Utah did in the trenches.
But they got, listen.
They got dudes.
They got dudes, and they'll be ready. And even though the quarterback's playing, the backup quarterback is faster. So,
do you know the backup quarterback's name?
No, he's number 15.
Bird Ficklin.
Yeah, Bird Ficklin.
B-Y-R-D. Bird.
He can pick him up and put him down. So, it's a tough task for Nebraska. I still think there's a way for Nebraska to win. You got to play better, and hopefully, they made a lot of improvement, you know, in this bowl prep and do with that. It's going to come down to tackling, though.
Sounds like a football game to me.
Yeah. At 2:30 in the afternoon, which is a great time to play.
Your favorite time to play?
Yeah.
You don't care. You laced up whenever. You said that.
In college, I like prime time.
It's prime, baby.
Yeah.
Quote, Jay Foreman. We'll be back. The Basketball Hall of Fame announced it's a 2026 finalist. Who do we think gets in? Who deserves it most? We'll talk about that to wrap up hour two. Segment left in hour two of Old School. Austin and Jay with you for another hour and change. I'll be with you as well for the Corner Three tonight at 6. Plenty to get to in the realm of college hoops, high school hoops as well, starting at 7. That's when pregame will be, with tip-off at 7:15, and then Nebraska wrestling post-match coverage tonight as well. That's the lineup for you for the rest of the evening. Make sure you get your plans for January, though, right? January 11th at Baxter Arena. Love Volleyball Nebraska starts its second season. Get your tickets online at lovb.com. Don't miss your opportunity to see all sorts of volleyball stars like Lexi Rodriguez and Jordan Larson dominate the floor as Love Nebraska takes on Love Houston on Sunday, January 11th. That'll be 3 p.m. at First Serve. You can go get your tickets and find out more about their promotional schedule online at lovbneb.com before it's too late. Tip of the cap, a shout-out salute to Rebecca Alex. She signs with Love Volleyball. She's headed up north to play for Love Madison. So unfortunate for her, she has to leave the state and go to Wisconsin. But best of luck to Rebecca Alex as she begins her professional career. In other news, Jay, like I teased, Basketball Hall of Fame notable first-time nominees for the class of 2026. On the women's side, you have the 96 national team, Elena Deladon and Candace Parker. On the men's side, Jamal Crawford as a player, Mike D'Antoni as a contributor. You have Blake Griffin, Iso Joe Johnson, and then Bruce Pearl and Kelvin Sampson, first-time nominees for the Basketball Hall of Fame. If you had to pick two or three from that list, who would you give the nod to?
I was a kid. I think Jamal Crawford as well. He's iconic. I don't know if he'll get in.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Because I think I think the way he was able to come off the bench and pretty much he was a full-fledged starter coming off the bench doing work in just micro minutes.
Right. Kind of helped be that bridge between Arizona, Seattle basketball.
Right. Yeah.
Still a huge ambassador for that region.
And so those are my main two. I'm just thinking right now. I can't believe Candace is not in.
I know. Well, she's first time eligible. Yeah. But, so I don't know what took so long.
Yeah. I mean,
end of playing career maybe.
Yeah. Cause she did play, you know, remember she was hurt 1 year, then came back. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So now
I assume that's all.
Yeah. The five years or whatever. But you would think that she, she was a problem.
Yeah.
Those are my main two, actually. I mean, Jamal Crawford is probably more of a biased pick, knowing that probably he will get in, but not right now. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I think he's going to have to probably get some, you know, maybe like Jordan or somebody to say, hey, you need to get this guy in.
I think that he has probably the best chance of the men's players, right, between him, Blake Griffin, and Joe Johnson. Yeah. Iso Joe was just like, what, 75% of Carmelo? And I love Iso Joe. He's a big part of those Hawks teams, but that's not a Hall of Famer to me. And even Blake Griffin, I think where Blake might pick up some votes is doing the media thing.
That's what I was just about to say.
He's been really good on TV, a good personality, and a good player, right?
Good
he had
to
stretches of
the,
absolutely. Yeah. Had stretches of dominance. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. His name will be out there. Really incredible player in college. Certainly had his moments in the pros. Obviously, think of him as the dunker with the Clippers, but developed into, you know, more well-rounded player in Detroit. Played roles, kind of that veteran at the end of Boston's bench at times as well. I'm just not sold on any of them. The two guys, Jay, that I think probably would have had the best resume would have been the coaches.
Yeah.
You know, in Bruce Pearl and Kelvin Sampson. I would take Kelvin long before Bruce Pearl in a Hall of Fame sort of discussion. Both those guys come with the show cost penalties from their past as well. But I do think that relative to their levels, Candace Parker and Elena Deladon were probably the better players in this class right now. For the first time eligible.
Yeah. And Deladon is like a unique story.
Yeah.
You know, like a unique, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because
from Joe Flacco,
but so dominant though.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like almost like Larry Bird, right? We started at UConn, obviously had some families because I think she has a sibling that was sick and didn't get the support. And I think mentally she was worn out with that. And then obviously went to Delaware and just was, then she got in the league and then it was kind of, you know, just kind of just went off into the abyss. You know, you don't really hear from her much, right? And obviously, you know, there's not a lot of opportunities, but I don't think people really appreciate how dominating she was. And I think injuries caught up to her as well. So I think it's probably, you know, more on the women getting in. You know, they're the, you know, the bell cows, the headliners now.
Some other returning candidates who are eligible from previous ballots, some interesting names. Marv Albert, longtime broadcaster. You think about Mark Few from the college ranks, and obviously with Team USA, Doc Rivers, not in the Basketball Hall of Fame, and then Amari Stoudemire, also returning eligible candidates.
Yeah. I can see Marv Albert. I think Marv Albert's really, you know, after this little issue, I think came back. Legendary though, for sure. Especially, you know, calling Knicks games. I mean, yeah. So,
does Few need a ring to get in?
I would think so. Don't you? I think he's a great. I think he probably gets in. I think he needs.
I mean, do you give him a nod for being Team USA assistant? If he was head coach, maybe.
Head coach for sure.
But also, it's Gonzaga. I mean, you're in Spokane, Washington. You're winning 25 games a year.
I don't think so.
I would probably lean toward him being in, but he might be my Jamal Crawford
pick. Yeah, right. I think he deserves to be in, but will he?
Okay, fair, fair.
Yeah.
Doc, I'm less sold on. I mean, you can't.
Doc's these last two stops is
played his way out.
Yeah, messed his way up.
Yeah.
And
Amari was so fun, but didn't have the longevity. No. Even the peak was good, not. It wasn't always elite.
Yeah, you didn't have that one game or that one series or something like that.
Now, if he gets a ring in Phoenix, if they knock off San Antonio or Los Angeles one of those times, maybe.
Yeah, and some of those bigger games, you know, him and Nash were tied together and they didn't really perform up to what they did in the regular season, especially down there in Phoenix.
Right. So it'll be interesting to see how close they get.
It's not a sexy class, though.
It's really not.
No, it's kind of ho-hum class, but sometimes you got to really dig into the numbers and the details and look at their situations to make sure that you make the right decision, because they're all worthy of being in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of when they get in.
Right. Yeah. I'm willing to be convinced, but just at first blush.
Yeah.
Nah.
You just, the two young ladies, and I want Jamal Crawford. Probably not. Maybe Marv Albert. And then maybe Blake Griffin, just because of politics, which is being on the air and all that. It's kind of like Blake Griffin just kind of reminds me of, everybody was surprised. I think Steve Young was the first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but, at least early. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's on TV.
Right.
And it's not taking anything away from him. He's way more accomplished than me. But when I think of first team or first ballot Hall of Famer, I'm thinking like Brady and Joe Montana and all that.
Oh, absolutely. So. We'll be back plenty more in hour three of Old School. Trades for Portal in Nebraska roster did come out today for the bowl game. We'll look over that. What does the future hold for the Huskers in the portal and in the bowl game against Utah? Plenty more all ahead. One more hour to go on Old School, sending off into your weekend.
Watch Old School live on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.